All right, on this episode, we are joined by Marcel Petipa.
You got it.
Yes. From Paraquito. I'm gonna let him take the floor on what they do because I think his messaging and his delivery and his mission of what his company does is a lot more defined than a lot of people that I speak to. So I'm not gonna butcher it. I'm just gonna let you spend a few minutes talking about what you do, and then we're gonna dive into some of the hands-on stuff we talked about.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike, and thanks for having me. It's great to be here. As you mentioned, I'm the CEO at a company called Paraquito, and we help digital and creative agencies measure and improve their profitability. So what that means in layman's terms is we help them install the systems that give them feedback on things like, are we making money on clients and projects? What types of things make us more or less money than others? Can we take on this project? What if we hire a person? What if we don't hire a person? What if they close? What if they don't close? All these kinds of decisions you're making every day, we help you make them with data.
Awesome. And is your process integrated in terms of like, an ongoing setup, an ongoing relationship, or are you kind of building people out with the tools that they need for success?
Yeah, it can be. So there's three steps essentially to what we do. The first step is an audit, which is really just about getting you the clarity on where the profitability leaks are in the business, exactly how much profit you should be making, and exactly where that profit is being lost. And then the metrics you can use to measure those areas of the business and the targets that you should be trying to optimize those to. So that's the first step, and you could just do that part, and lots of people do. And then after that, you can engage us to help you install a system that's going to help measure those specific KPIs and work through all of the nuances of that. So it's one thing to say, hey, I don't know, we want to measure our profitability by client or by service type, but actually getting the structures in your data to do that is much more technical work and requires some knowledge of data systems engineering. So we can help facilitate that whole system design process. And then lastly, we can actually become your fractional data operations team. So instead of having to go and hire a data engineer and a COO and, maybe a project manager to manage all of this, you can get us fractionally to do that for a fraction of the cost. And then you also get to benefit from us working with lots of other agencies and continually innovating on our system to do this. And we take care of everything from pulling timesheets to doing all the quality assurance, catching that 99-hour time entry that Mike let run over the weekend because he was, I don't know, traveling around Spain or whatever it is that you do these days. Or, somebody didn't use the right naming convention in the project setup and the project management tool, or the client's name is slightly different in the accounting tool than it is in the time tracking tool. So all those kinds of things we pay attention to, we clean things up, we normalize them, and then also make sure that as the business changes, the data doesn't degrade or become incompatible from one period to another. So you get those nice long horizontal insights, you get to see patterns and trends and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, a long answer to your question, but it can be as simple as just a snapshot, and it can be as complex as us essentially becoming a part of the team.
Love it. Awesome. So you said something right near the end there, which is something I think everybody who owns a marketing agency or any type of business, but I think we're both servicing the same kind of person. So we'll stick to the agency side of things about, hey, the naming convention on this thing wasn't quite right, or this didn't match with that. Like how detrimental can those like small, what feel like marginal errors actually be to an organization?
Well, you will learn the answer to that question when you go to ask a question of your data and realize, oh shit, I got to spend 2 hours in a spreadsheet cleaning all of this up before I can get the answer. And if you're anything like me or other agency owners, you don't have 2 hours kicking around in your calendar to do stuff like this. You probably have another call you've got to get on in 10 minutes, or you have another client deliverable that needs to be done by the end of the day. And so because there's so much friction in front of getting insight, usually you just don't end up getting it. Or maybe like once a year during offsite, or once you have like, holiday break, you'll dig into this stuff and look at it and realize there's all kinds of problems and then not look at it again for another year. So these little bits of friction really do add up, and they especially add up as you scale and the cadence by which and the volume by which you need to be looking at these metrics and the number of people that need to look at these metrics goes up. All of these little things create operational drag and makes it really hard to scale those systems. So it doesn't have to be complicated. It can be very simple, but early on, getting in the habit of being deliberate about the structure of your data and just having some simple checkpoints and processes to make sure that those processes are being followed can pay off in spades, because you can ask a question and quickly get the answer, and having data to make decisions is a really, really powerful way to move the business in the right direction.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. There's a couple things I want to ask you. I think one of the biggest thing is about the main KPIs that one could be looking out for, but I want to stay on the topic that we're on right now and ask you. So I've got my first two clients. I'm super excited. I'm making my $7,000 a month. I don't right now I'm not, thinking about the problems that could come up with this drag with the inaccurate data in going back and pulling that out. But hopefully listening to this might spark a little bit of like, ooh, maybe I have to pay attention from the beginning. What are some things that people can think about from the beginning or implement from the beginning of the whole process to help them, two-part thing, it's like to help them grow into something like what you can help with, but also to like to be able to get the best information out of the records that they're keeping.
Well, it's interesting because in order to answer this question, I am going to talk about some of the key metrics because, of course, that's the purpose of structuring the data is to get it to give us an answer or be able to give us an answer to a question that's important. So the fundamentals of a service business model are that you need to have profit left over after you service a client. But the thing that's tricky about a service business model is your cost is not always the same. If you pay me $10,000 to build you a website, it's different in terms of how much it costs me if it takes me 1 hour or it takes me 100 hours or it takes me 1,000 hours to do that website. Now, the trap that solopreneurs or people just kind of getting started that are subject matter expert and have aspirations to build an agency fall into is not considering the cost of their time. And if you want to take that way of thinking further, the cost of your time is actually different based on what it would cost you to hire somebody else to play that role, right? So it's very possible that if you're the person that's building the whole website, you spend part of your day being the copywriter, part of the day being the designer, part of the day being the strategist, which is, maybe much higher level, part of the day being the account manager. And so that's kind of how I would be thinking early about structuring not only how you estimate time when you're quoting out a project or you're trying to get a price in front of the client, but also how you track the time so that later when you go, man, I have five clients that want to hire me this month to build a website. I can't do all of that work unless I hire somebody. Now the question of, well, where do I spend the most time? And what are some of the lowest leverage things that I spend my time on? And how much will it cost me to hire somebody to come in and do that? And will I have enough margin? You'll have the answers to all of those questions if you have data, because you can look at it and go, well, I spend almost half the time on websites doing design work. I know I can go hire a freelance designer that's pretty good for $50 an hour. And so I know I'm charging enough money because I've thought about that when I priced out my project. So that's another thing to consider is you want to understand what it would cost you to hire other people to do these things when you're estimating out the cost of doing the project. And the fundamental here is you want to make sure you're making at least 50% margin on whatever that cost would be if you didn't do any of the work, right? So if you didn't have to lift a finger to get that work done, other people were hired to do everything. You want it priced such that even after paying them, you'd have at least 50% of the money left over. So if it's a $10,000 project, your cost to deliver that should be no more than $5,000. So thinking about it in that way, thinking about designing your pricing and your scoping and then your time tracking as if you were had already hired those people and were already paying them is what allows you to get to that place and not hit the brick wall of having to now figure all of that out before you can make the decisions and just breeze right on through and scale up. Now, of course, I don't want to downplay that finding the right people and training them and managing them, all that stuff is challenging, but it's not going to be made more challenging by the fact that you're flying completely blind making those calls.
Yeah, absolutely. So then, so kind of the big takeaway that I got from that is, whether it's just in a spreadsheet or whether it's in an online tool, as you're delivering from the early stages, whether it's website or, marketing campaign, is actually separating it by the job roles that you're the one that creating. Because again, usually at the beginning, you are all the roles, but actually splitting those roles up and time tracking from, from an onboarding, from a, build to an ongoing maintenance in terms of all those functions, who are all the people and what roles are you acting in and tracking that?
Sorry, I think I lost you there for a second, Mike. Yeah. But yes, I piggybacking off what you said, yes, that's exactly right. You want to think about it in terms of what hats do I wear and what would it cost me and how much time would it take, for somebody else to wear that hat. And I think the mistake that I see a lot of people make here, it's such a simple idea, but it's worth repeating, is that the biggest issue is going to be if when you're estimating that out, when you're thinking about, okay, the client wants a website, I think it's going to take this many hours, you know, split into these five different buckets, that schema of, you know, it's design hours, it's PM hours, it's development hours, it's account management hours, doesn't match the time tracking. So, and this happens, like we'll go in an agency that has like 50 people at it, you know, doing like eight figures in revenue. And we pull up a timesheet and we pull up their estimate and they don't even look close to the same. And so answering the question of, did we scope this thing right beyond like total hours is really, really hard, because now we have to go through every time entry and be like, okay, well, what bucket do we put that in? And, you know, like, so if you can solve that problem early, saves you all kinds of headaches. Just make sure that however you're structuring your time tracking, you can get the time entries easily back into those same buckets. And then you can just at the end of every project very easily see like, okay, I thought it was going to take 20 hours of design. It took 40. That happened three projects in a row. So I need to estimate more design time. And once you start to see some patterns there, then you've de-risked the exercise of hiring somebody. The scaries can kind of go away on that. And then it's just a question of like, you know, the management and quality issues that you might have to work through.
Yeah. And do you feel that, you know, I'm estimating them for myself and I know my level of focus. And if I'm project managing and designing and writing, there is a little bit of overlap to my energy, to that output, versus if I have a copywriter and a designer and a project manager who maybe are not just working for me, they've got other things going on. You know, there's less overlap of their mindset, of their work, of their efficiency. And so do you recommend taking your hours and adding a little bit of padding to that to make sure that like as you bring people on, like, is that an appropriate, is there a percentage maybe?
Totally. Yeah. And this is why, like, generally, like when we price and when we advise our clients that we work with on pricing, we're generally getting them to set the price such that delivery margin is closer to 70% on a project. And if you're working with freelancers or you're working up to that, it's going to help you absorb some of those inefficiencies and still come out on the P&L, you know, on the right side of the equation. Because in that case, it's you're absorbing inefficiency. And then if you move to having internal employees, you still want to consider inefficiency, which is you're paying them for all of their time and not all of it is going to be spent working. They're going to need vacation and holidays and time off. And then there's going to be times when you don't have enough work to keep them busy. So you want to bake a little bit of contingency into the price to absorb that inefficiency. So yeah, 100%. The minimum is 50%. And that's what it should be in your financial statements on broad time horizons, but on a project by project basis, give yourself 10, 15, 20 plus percent. And really it's as much as you can charge the client. Go for that, of course. But if you're getting close to that 50% mark and they're still pushing the price down, then there's a serious question about like, is this going to be sustainable or scalable? And if you end up in a place where consistently you're pricing at that level, you might be locking yourself into a set of golden handcuffs where it can never really scale unless you're the one doing the work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, a great thing about interviewing you is you ask my follow-up questions and then answer them by yourself. It's wonderful. You take all the work away from me. It's great. You're like, oh, what could go wrong with this? I was like, that was my question. But no, awesome. So I think that's really, really practical. I think most people are kind of just running around like a chicken with their head cut off in the context of, okay, I got to do this thing. And they're saying this many total hours. And then they just dive in and start doing it. And I don't think a lot of people are tracking anything from the beginning. So that's a great takeaway. What are the other pieces to this, you know, from an early stage company, someone who's like, you know, I've got a certain amount of time to kind of map this stuff, to pay attention to it, but I don't have the most robust business intelligence because it's still just me. But like, what are the other pieces that someone should put in play early stage in their agency?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, pre-employees, that's it. Just like price the project so that it's profitable and it's able to pay for what it would cost to have other people do it. And then try to track, you know, and it's not going to be perfect. It might be 80% or 90% accurate, but try to track how long it actually took you. And then on some cadence, go back and look at it and figure out like, is it off? And here's the cool thing is if you can standardize this stuff, then over 3, 4, 5, 6 projects, if those naming conventions are the same, it's so easy to just make like a pivot table even or a simple graph inside of a spreadsheet that goes, okay, design time for website projects, like on average, oh, we've gone over by 10%, like really consistently. So that's really it. And then once you get into having employees that you're paying a salary, then you would want to start to pay attention to a couple of other metrics. And we can go there if you'd like, but before you get to that stage, it's really as simple as just like estimate it right. And then figure out if your estimate was accurate or not. That's really all you got to worry about.
Cool. Awesome. And then when you're, so this next point, is it in the context of whether I'm working with freelancers or specifically if I'm bringing on like an employee, or is it, or does it work for both?
The context is slightly different, but this is one of the things that I really like, as an idea kind of getting off the ground, is using freelancers initially before hiring employees. I think we tend to rush to hiring employees because that's, I don't know, that's what we think we're supposed to do, is like hire somebody full time. But the reality is that there's, we were talking about this right before the show, right? Discussing these growth trenches, as we describe them, where like I'm in the middle of a growth trench right now, where we got to a scale where like I was doing all the work for clients and it was like, okay, we can stay here or we can go to the next level. But to go to the next level, I've got to start hiring people, teaching them how to do what I do. We have to build all those processes, and I need to deliver all the client work while I train that person, but then also start selling enough shit so that we can pay for that person. So I have to basically do three times as much work as I'm doing now for a period of time to get out the other end. So similarly, when you start to bring on new employees, whether that be freelancers or it be employees, you've got to consider that. So if we're talking about bringing on freelancers, this is about really making sure that you're pricing things right, and you're trying to hold them to and de-risking essentially the cost that they're going to incur, and you've got enough margin there. And you also have to be selling enough so that you probably have some overhead, right? So if you've gotten to that stage, you're probably like trying to pay your mortgage and you might have a family you have to support. You have some requirements, right? I need to pull 5, 6, 7, 10K a month out of the business to like meet my lifestyle needs. So that's kind of similar to overhead. If you had a business to run, you have a certain level that you need to get to. So you need to be simultaneously hiring those people and bringing them in, but also selling enough to keep them busy and pay for the overhead. So early on, when you're slowly starting to back yourself out of doing the work, you're probably a little inconsistent on sales, right? Because that's the first kind of handbrake, is I sell something, then I have to do it. Then I sell something, I have to do it. So you're probably seeing this kind of business roller coaster that ebbs and flows throughout the year. And that's natural. It's normal because your time can't be consistently deployed against sales. So that's why I like using freelancers early on. They're flexible. When they're not busy, you're not paying for them. And so you don't have the burden immediately of having to like very quickly ramp up and sustain a high level of sales. It's a little more forgiving as you slowly start to work yourself out of doing the work and breaking that tension between selling and doing. So freelancers, I love starting with those. And then once you get to a place where you're like, hey, every month we have, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours of design time. That's consistent. I'm looking at the pipeline. There's lots of work coming in. I'm very confident that if I hired a full-time employee, I would have enough work to keep them busy. That's when you want to start looking at replacing those freelancers with full-time employees. Because A, you'll probably be able to drop the cost per hour. So if you pay $50 an hour for a designer, if you hired one and they cost you, I don't know, 70K a year, that cost per hour is going to be quite a bit lower. So your margins go up, even though your pricing will probably stay the same. That's a nice thing. But that's predicated on the idea that you're getting, you know, 60, 70% of their time on an annual basis actually going towards doing client work. If that's not the case, then if you have a slow month, you still got to pay their paycheck. That's a bad situation to be in. So I like that kind of freelancers or elastic capacity, as I call it, into full-time capacity as you start to get through that first kind of growth trench, which is you doing the work to you no longer doing the work and focusing more on sales.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, I guess it's very subjective in terms of like when is the right time, but I get that question all the time. And I always find whether it's going to the freelancer method or the employee method, it's always as soon as you can, you know, because I think where a lot of times we can kind of come into these things with a bit of scarcity mindset around like, well, what happens if? I mean, every day as an entrepreneur is a what happens if, and you, you just go and fix that problem. Right. Or the, you know, or you don't, but that's the end of the game. And so I always kind of say to people, like, the quicker you can delegate and get stuff off of your plate, the better. obviously you need to have the buffer financially and the pipeline that's kind of built out and ready to go to make that function. But I'm of the opinion that the sooner you can hand off any type of task that's not in your zone of genius or like something that you're amazing at, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I was talking to a friend about this the other day. Like we're walking around and we're talking about like, you know, oh, like our sales kind of drop off in this many months. And he's talking about the same thing. Oh yeah, I've got lots of work up until like November. And then, you know, like, and so, and, but like, that's like just always what it's like, right? That's just our normal. And we sleep just fine at night because we've kind of become numb to this. But it's like, you told 98% of people that have like a job, like, hey, 2 months from now, you might get laid off. They would be so stressed all the time. They wouldn't sleep. Like it would destroy their life. And so like, as an entrepreneur, yeah, you just kind of have to be like, okay with placing these bets, knowing that that runway has just gotten shorter and trusting that you're going to be able to do what's required to get the business through to that next level. So there's a lot of mindset stuff that comes into it. And if you're really struggling with that adjustment, it's a, you know, you're going to have to get used to it because it doesn't get any easier and the stakes just kind of get higher and higher the more you grow.
Yeah. The one that I, that used to trip me up really bad as a marketing agency owner at the beginning was in January, after everyone's kind of had the family time, time off for the holidays, they're listening to podcasts, watching YouTube videos, talking to their other business owner friends. They always come back saying, well, I think we need to like get on this trend. I think we should work with another company that does this and this. Like everyone just comes with these stupid ideas and they want to take away the like profitable, stable stuff and be like, we should go on TikTok now. I'm like, no, you shouldn't. And it used to freak me out because I knew in January when I had like that, you know, welcome back to the office call, it would always be like, hey, we've been thinking, you know, well, maybe we need to make a change. And it was always, it used to scare me a lot. Now it's kind of like, no, you're not allowed to, because here's your KPIs, you're making money, shut up and keep paying for money. But
yeah, indigestion, always, not starvation. This is well, like, I think the last thing that I'll leave everybody on is like, we see companies that do millions of dollars, eight figures in some cases of revenue and are not profitable, right? These companies are not suffering from starvation. They're suffering from indigestion. They just happen to feel the same. And it's very easy to get in this mindset of saying, well, you know, like every month, like you might be in a position where it's like, I need $5,000 a month to pay my mortgage and my car payment and my insurance and all that stuff. And at scale, that might be, I need $100,000 a month to pay for the office and my payroll and my lawyers and all that stuff. And if you're focused on just getting enough revenue in the door to cover that, you're trying to sell your way out. You're thinking about it in terms of starvation when the problem might actually be indigestion. So if you can be thinking about that and bake that way of thinking into your business from the start, then you, it will just save you so many heartaches. Because if that problem is not solved, there's no amount of scale that can save you from that. No amount of scale that absolves you from having to have good throughput, efficient throughput from getting a dollar from a client and having it come out the other end and having a good amount of that left over.
Amazing. Yeah, very good point. And I think I have specific recollections of like being my highest revenue years and like wondering where all the money was until you do these exercises, until you put better systems in place so your team can be more efficient. There's so many things that go into that when you get to that stage. But I think we covered some really, really helpful practical things that a lot of people kind of getting started in that, like, you know, 5, 10, 15K a month kind of range should be thinking about, should be implementing, should be kind of preparing for. So that's great. Is there anything that you think I didn't ask or anything that you think we should add into the end of that?
I mean, we could talk, I'm sure, Mike, for hours about this stuff. I'll point people towards some resources that they can go deeper on. And really, this is about, I think we've covered the basics for, you know, getting up to the point where you want to hire employees. Once you hire employees, it changes a little bit. You have to start considering things like utilization and considering more deeply things like average billable rate. So we have some content on the website at parakeeto.com that's helpful with this. And I'll send some links to Mike if you want to include those in the show notes. But some videos and some blog posts that go into detail on, you know, exactly what is delivery margin, how do you calculate it, and what are the different things, the levers that you can pull to improve it. Because there's cost cutting measures as well as like revenue increasing measures that you can take to stretch that gap. And then of course we have our agency profitability toolkit, which is a free set of templates, training videos, cheat sheets, and tools that you can use to calculate some of this stuff, start to model out what things might look like in future stages of your business. So if you want to grab a free copy of that, you can head to parakeeto.com/toolkit. And I encourage you to start thinking about this stuff early.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll link all that in the show notes. That's amazing. And then if somebody wants to just, find out more from you, where are you the most active? Where should they come see you?
Yeah, definitely on LinkedIn. Hit me up, Marcel Petipa. I'm wearing a shirt with birds on it. I'm pretty easy to spot. And of course, parakeeto.com if you want to learn more about what we do and get in touch with us.
Love it. Thanks so much, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Mike.